Hello and welcome to Deprogram with Carrie Smith. We are doing an interview today. Before we get to that, I have been remiss in saying, if you like this channel, you can help us grow by sharing it with your friends, sharing the videos, by subscribing on YouTube or wherever it is that you're listening to it. And if you want to help support us financially, we do have a Patreon, a Subscribestar, and a Locals, and you can find those links below. Thank you for being here today. I'm very excited about my interview guest. This is an old friend of mine from what I think of as my old life, who remained friendly with me and did not cut me off when I left the social justice cult, or what I call the cult. Kylie Ora LaBelle is a proud Jewish woman, a writer, editor, and marketer living in Los Angeles. She is married to comedian Daniel LaBelle. And together they have two beautiful daughters, two dogs, two tortoises, four chickens, a rooster, a cockatiel, and an albino hedgehog, which I have to ask about. She's the author of the first children's book for the children of Jewish converts called Jewish Just Like You. You can read her work at KylieOraLaBelle.com. Please welcome my friend Kylie.
Hi. Thanks.
Hi. Oh, thanks for being here. Your bio includes a lot of animals.
The albino hedgehog sadly passed away two nights ago. But I know you want to ask about her, but she was amazing. We had her for 2 years. And my husband and I grew up with animals. He had a pet possum at one point. So we're crazy about animals.
What? I'm so sorry to hear that she passed away. What? I don't even know what an albino hedgehog looks like. I'm gonna have to look it up.
It's just like, albino people, I don't think they have red eyes. But she has eyes, and she was all white and very cute, much smaller than a regular hedgehog.
So I want to talk to you about so many things, because I've sort of loosely kept up with your life since I left Los Angeles and left the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And for anybody listening along, I knew Kylie from the comedy world that I worked in, and your husband's a comedian, and as you do, you meet a lot of people, you stay connected on social media, and you get like little glimpses into their life. Mm-hmm. And you and your husband are so impressive to me, because you live in Los Angeles, which in the entertainment world also somewhat. And I that world, the comedy world in particular, I think of as so restrictive. There's sort of an orthodoxy in what opinions you're allowed to have. And you guys are just authentically being yourselves and seem to express whatever opinions you have, whether they go along with popular opinion or not. And so I wanted to ask you, I guess, to start, like, what is that like living in LA? Do I have a wrong impression of what LA is like based on my time there? Or
yeah. So let me just say, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I converted Orthodox. So I'm in an Orthodox Jewish bubble. So
okay.
When I go outside of my bubble, no, it's as insane as it looks. Yeah. You see just, you know, models at the farmer's market wearing nothing, or like crazy billboards or whatever it is. So, but LA doesn't bother me so much, because it's not like, I'm not like you. I don't really belong to a party. Mm-hmm. I have liberal views. I have more conservative views. But LA people are just kind of stupid and they don't care. They're just like liberal by default. So it's not that it's like actively so bad. It's only bad in Hollywood. So for sure, I think Hollywood is just has the worst values. And
yeah,
trying to like, it's always been trying to transform, you know, the United States and the world to be aligning with those values, which are actually no values. So that's definitely difficult to be around that. And we've separated ourselves a lot from it. But yeah, we're in our bubble and people think like us. So
you're
in bed.
Can I ask you a question about, so I don't actually belong to a party myself. Mm-hmm. I'm a political independent. For someone who used to know me when I was in Los Angeles and still friends with me on social media, do I come off as being like a Republican?
No, but okay. Like anyone, I mean, that's to me. I think to other people, yeah, to other more extreme people, but I'm like a pretty level-headed person. So to a leftist, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because anything like right of them is a Republican or whatever So anyone who has a brain is a Republican.
So you guys are political independents then, and you in your Orthodox Jewish community, can you tell me a little bit about, I guess, what that bubble is like, and what I know you've written about it, and what the process was for you to convert?
Okay, that's a lot to unpack. So let me start. So the bubble is great. It's not like, so my big thing is trying to combat against like Hollywood's portrayal of Orthodox Jews, especially on Netflix, which seems to just really have something out for us with my unorthodox life and unorthodox, and like any story of someone leaving the community is so sexy to them, because not only do they hate Judaism, they hate religion in general. Like the media hates religion. So that's their agenda. But yeah, being part of a community, the Orthodox community here, it's very nice. People are very open-minded. Some Orthodox communities are not so much, but this one, like, you can dress like how you want. And, you know, some women cover their hair, some women don't. It's all very beautiful and very diverse. People come from all over to come to this community, like Israelis, Persians who escaped Iran in crazy ways, you know, Ashkenazim, Sephardic. The Ashkenazim are from Eastern Europe. Sephardim are from like Spain, Turkey, Morocco, places like that. So we all come together and it's all pretty nice. And just you feel like you're embraced by a hug when you're in this community, because like when you give birth to a baby, you'll have meals for at least a month. Like people you don't even know will drop food at your place. The best example of this was, we have some, do you have a meal train? Have you ever done that? Like when a friend
we gets have sick? One at our church, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So a meal train is when someone gets sick or someone in the family, you know, their family, God forbid, dies, or they have a baby, just some big life thing where they can't think about cooking, but they need to eat. So we had just random people signing up this past time when we had our second daughter, and this guy signed up, and it was a little awkward because he forgot that he signed up. So
I did that once. It's embarrassing. It's awful. It's so shameful. Okay.
Yeah. But I understand it happens. People are busy. So this old Persian guy signed up. I had no idea who he was. And it was like past the time that we said we wanted to eat. So we called him and we're like, hey, it's not a big deal if you forgot. And he's like, I'm so sorry. And he goes out and he buys us like $100 worth of food and he delivers it himself. And he's like, here, take it. Then he calls us up. He's like, I really feel bad. So tomorrow you go to the burger place and there's going to be lunch for you there. We're like, it's okay. Don't do that. It's okay. And we didn't think he'd do it. And the next day he calls us at noon. He's like, why haven't you picked up their burgers? They're asking. What? And he got us, yeah, like $100 worth of food again. And then I was talking with my Persian friend. I'm like, do you know this guy? He's like, that guy owns half of the neighborhood and he funded all of my education. I'm like, this was incredible. Like,
wow,
just the amount of kindness that happens in our community. Like if you're sick, like anytime you need anything, people will be there for you. And it's great in LA. Like we didn't start out so Orthodox and like embedded in the community. So LA was very cold at first. And like, this is a place where if you don't have any sort of community, it's just horrible. Because it's like everybody's spaced out and it's just such an impersonal place. It's not like New York where we came from, where you're seeing people every day. So you can just become very isolated here. So that's been great to just be part of this. And then about my conversion, you asked.
Well, let me ask you before you talk about your conversion. So by the way, I love your outfit. You look really lovely today.
It's all Amazon. I only shop on Amazon.
I love it. So you mentioned like in your community, you can dress kind of how you want. And so what is Orthodox? What does the Orthodox and Orthodox Jewish mean for people like myself who have no idea?
So basically before there was like Orthodox, conservative, reform, reconstructionist. So it's kind of like a scale of like kind of how religious you are. So reform. So basically Orthodox means we believe that the Torah came from God and Moshe delivered it to us. And yeah, whereas maybe other sects of Judaism might think it was written by man, which doesn't make any sense to me, because if it was written by man, why would I be following it? But yeah, so we believe that it was derived from God. And basically, there was no Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, all that. There was no separation of that. Everybody was just Jewish. And then in the 1800s in Germany, some Jewish people decided to get together and become Reform. And they would like hold services in churches and have organs. And on Yom Kippur, instead of fasting, they would have feasts of like shrimp and other non-kosher items. So then in response to that, like the conservative came to conserve Judaism. And then we became our own separate thing of Orthodox, but we're just originally, what I'm trying to explain is we're just Jewish. Like, there was no separation until pretty recently. So yeah. And just, yeah, when a lot of people came to America, they dropped their religion because they had to work on the Sabbath on, you know, Saturday. So that sparked a lot. And then in response to the Holocaust, of course, some people became more religious, some became less. That had a lot of trauma in our community. So yeah, there's just all different types of Jews. And my husband he grew up sort of Orthodox, going to Orthodox schools, and then he left to do comedy and became completely not religious. And then when he met me, he came back to religion. But he's what you would call Baal Tshuva, which is somebody who does tshuva, which is repentance. And basically they become religious. So there's a lot of those in our community. Like people, it's kind of like being a convert, except you were born Jewish. You know, they see, I guess it'd be like born again, or like what you are, like becoming faithful, if you want to say that, like later on when they're an adult.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So is there a word for people who are, who are like non-religious but Jewish?
I'm secular, or they'll say, like, every person in Hollywood says they're culturally Jewish.
Culturally Jewish, okay.
Which just means like watching Broad City and eating deli to them. And that's where, unfortunately, a lot of them think liberalism is Judaism, and it's not. So they'll like take Jewish things, like Jewish concepts, and then like twist them to fit the ideology. Unfortunately,
that happens in Christianity as well.
Yeah. So it doesn't give Judaism a good name, because that's not Judaism. Unfortunately, that's like the main thing that they see. Mm-hmm. So, and then they just think that Orthodox are crazy and oppressing women and mentally ill and all this other bad stuff. So,
yeah. So were you raised in a religion and a belief system?
My grandmother was Catholic, but no, my parents were secular. We did Christmas and Easter, and that was pretty much it. So it was just about the commercialism, nothing spiritual. I believed in God until I was like 12, and then someone said, well, what if there isn't a God? And I was like, well, I guess there isn't, because I haven't seen any miracles and the world is a terrible place. Mm-hmm. So I was an atheist until I met my husband and he introduced me to Orthodox Judaism.
Okay. So you have a piece, maybe this is a good jumping off point. Let me see if I can share this. So anybody who wants to read this, I'll just put it up on the screen and then you can go find this piece. It's in the Jewish Journal. It's called I'd Be Lost Without the Torah. Studying the Torah is a form of self-care for me. Can you tell us a little bit about that piece? And that's probably a good introduction to how it is that you started to learn more about Orthodox Judaism and to eventually convert.
Yeah. So basically, I didn't know how to be a good person, because I think that when you don't actually have values from, for you, it's the Bible, for me, it's the Torah. We also call it the Bible. When you don't have values from that, you just make up what you think a good person is, and that can change and fluctuate. And it's not true. There's no truth to it. You're just worshiping yourself, you know?
Can I interject there? I completely agree. I've started thinking about this a lot more, because when I found God, I was sort of like, well, that's just me. And I don't want to, you know, maybe not everyone needs a belief in God. And who am I to say, you know, not everyone will, we know not everyone will find God. And so who am I to say, well, that person, I really need to convert them. Maybe they think they're doing fine. And, but I've started thinking about, I had an atheist friend who used to say that he worshiped reason. And the more I started thinking about it, it was like, no, that just means you worship yourself. Because at the end of the day, if you can reason your way into some type of immoral act, then it's fine because you've used a reason to justify it. So I completely agree. Like what that actually means, what you said there about worshiping yourself, I think I have a much deeper understanding of that than I used to. And so when you say I didn't know how to be a good person, you make me think of I think it's C.S. Lewis had a quote about how it's something like, I'm going to butcher it, but he said, no one knows how bad they are until they try very hard to be good.
That's great.
And then you can start to see it, right? Mm-hmm. So tell me more about that, studying the Torah and learning that about yourself and your belief system.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this. I don't know if I mentioned this in the article, but like, so I was friends with like pretty radical people, like, you know, crust punks, you know?
No, I don't.
The crust punks were basically just rich white kids who decided they didn't like mommy and daddy and they'd go and live on the street and drink 40s and like cut up their pants and they'd always have pit bulls next to them.
What?
There's probably a lot of them in Austin. Like
probably a lot. I've never heard that. Crust punk?
Yeah, crust punk. Okay. I was born in 88, so I don't know if that was like just during my generation, but yeah, that's what they called themselves. And they would, I would hang around people and we would shoplift because we're sticking it to the man. Like, you know, so we're like, oh, that's our value system. My friend steal this book by Abby Hoffman, one of the yippies. So yeah, like if I would never do that today because when you become religious, you're like, any type of stealing is bad. Like Jews, we can't even take from someone's orange tree. Like, let's say someone has an orange tree. Don't quote me on this, but I believe if it's like hanging on public property, I think you're allowed, or if it's dropped. But yeah, like we have all these rules about if you find a lost item, you have to like do your due diligence to get it back to the owner. Or, you know, if the cashier gives you too much change, like it is stealing to take it. Mm-hmm. And it makes you think about more than yourself. So the Torah just made so much sense to me. On the outside, it seems very harsh and everything. Like, I don't know how Christian Bible study works, but with the Torah, we just have so many texts deciphering what the actual Torah means. So when it says like God gets angry, like that's just our way of expressing it because we don't know, you know, or that's just like in human terms, we don't know what that actually means. And unfortunately, like in Reform or more secular Jewish schools, they only learn the surface level. And on the surface level, it can seem crazy. And it can seem like it doesn't make any sense. But once you dive even just a little bit, like the basic commentary on it, it's incredible. I'm trying to think of an example. So let me think. I don't want to get too insider baseball with this.
Okay.
But okay. So basically on Shabbat, there's the Sabbath. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of things we can't do. Like we can't start a fire. And that translates to not using electricity, which means you can have the lights on. You just can't touch them. And you can put them on a timer. That's perfectly fine. But then that also translates into not using your phone because it's going to light up. And just when you practically do these things, like I don't use my phone every week for 25 hours, or if there's a holiday, it might even be longer. It might be a few days without my phone. It's just incredible. And like, you really feel connected and time goes differently on Shabbat. Like you're just sitting around with friends, you're eating, you're going to synagogue, you're connecting with God, you're reading Torah. I mean, it's just incredible. Like, especially in today's age where I'm constantly glued to my phone or driving around or rushing. It's just, and especially with kids, like kids are always on the screens now, and like for them to take a break.
Yes.
By the hours. And like when I'm with my daughters during the week, I hate to say it, but I'm on my phone. Like when I'm feeding my daughter, or like watching my kids, and on Shabbat, I can't do that. And it's just so incredible. So when you start to live these values in the Torah and these lessons, they just start to make so much sense. Mm-hmm. I'm hesitant to go too deep because there are some things that could sound crazy if you don't know, but
that's okay. Well, one of the things that struck me with your piece was just saying how, and like what you're saying now, is when you started reading and diving in, you sort of thought like, yes, this makes sense, like to have this guide map for how to live. Mm-hmm. And that was my experience with the Bible as well, was sort of, and I know it sounds silly, I've joked about it before, but I remember kind of reading it and actually looking at some of the stuff and saying, well, like this seems like common sense, like don't lie. Mm-hmm. but so many people disregard that, like, mm-hmm. you know, white lies, and like you said, people who might get extra change from the cashier and just pocket it, and those mm-hmm. little things that are psyche, unless you have that guidebook for how to live. I think a lot of times, I'm not calling out everyone, I know I can already hear people in the comments being like, I don't believe in God and I would return the change. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I'm just saying, mm-hmm. I think it helps to have those fence posts, you know, that guideline, that map that says this is how to behave. So there's not that wiggle room for you to justify things in your head, you know?
Yeah. Like in the Torah, one of the biggest sins you can do, and when I say sin, like it's not, to me, a sin is just something that breaks your chain with God. And when you do mitzvot, the mitzvahs, we have 613 of them, you get closer to God. So it's not so like harsh, like, oh, you're sinning. Like that's kind of a bad word, bad translation. It's more like you can feel closer to God or less close to God, and that's mm-hmm. your choice, or closer to your soul and who you are. But yeah, like the biggest sin in the Torah, one of them is gossiping. It's akin to murder. And to illustrate this, like there's a story about a guy goes into a forest with someone who's been gossiping, and he said, okay, this is how bad this is. So rip open a feather pillow, and then the feather pillow, he rips it open and the feathers go everywhere. And he's like, go and try to pick them up. He's like, I can't. He's like, well, that's what you're doing when you're saying a rumor. And it's akin to murder. You can murder someone's reputation. Words can be very hurtful. So we have so many books about gossip alone. Like, wow. even if it's true, like it's not good to gossip. And then it tells you like the instances in which you can speak things, like if someone's about to get into a very bad business deal, you can warn them in a certain way that it's not gossip, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah. It's just so intricate. We have the Talmud, which is rabbis. It just the Gemara, which is rabbis going back and forth, literally. And you read the arguments, and then at the end, they come to a decision. So we study that. Men study that. Some women study it. I don't really study it all day long. And like, it's a very. I also just love how like there's so much questioning. In my religion, like another great story that I like to illustrate is when God was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because they were like raping everyone. Like they were about to rape the angels. I don't know if you have that. Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lot gave up his daughter. Terrible stuff. They would rape everything. Like they were just horrible. So when God was going to destroy them, Abraham came and tried to reckon with God. He's like, if I find 100 good people, will you not destroy them? You know, I don't know if you have this too, but
yeah.
That back and forth is incredible. Or just the relationship Moses had with God, also a back and forth. So I just found that to be incredible. Whereas other religions, maybe it's more so like, this is what you do and there's no questioning. And you have to stick to the dogma of it. Yeah, that I just found that to be great.
So you're encouraged to actually ask questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a misconception I think people have about people of faith, and probably based in some truth. I'm sure there are different churches and communities and where, I mean, I know there are, where you can't question. I just watched a documentary on Warren Jeffs, the Mormon cult, the polygamous cult. Remember when they raided that compound in Texas, and this was over 10 or 15 years ago now. But anyway, the docuseries was really great in just showing you how closed off that community became and how it was just ruled over by this one tyrant, basically this kind of cult leader. And mm-hmm. And so I know a lot of that's based on real life examples where they think that all people of faith live in a cult-like environment. And that couldn't be further from the truth. In my church, it's very much, you're encouraged to ask questions and learn and to figure mm-hmm. things out. And so what was it about the Torah? So you kind of explained what you thought, or it sounds like to me, what was missing from your life and that like mm-hmm. guidebook and a lesson for life. Did you have an experience with God that was something transcendent? People have asked me that question before. I got embarrassed answering it the first time, but I'm not embarrassed anymore. Have you ever had that experience? And
I'd say I'm very connected to God. I'm very like, I know everything bad happens for a reason or whatever, but I'm not like, what would I say, like foo-foo, like mm-hmm. I haven't like lit candles and like feel God or anything. Like, when I went to the Western Wall for the first time, which is our holiest site, I didn't feel anything. I was just like very self-conscious because I was surrounded by very like much more Orthodox women than me who were speaking Hebrew. I don't really know Hebrew so well. And then it took my husband a few weeks later proposed to me at the wall, the Kotel, we call it. And it was snowing and there was nobody at the wall. Because in Jerusalem, it's like in LA when it rains. In Jerusalem, when it snows, it's kind of rare. So like, it runs like, oh, there's like an inch of snow. Like we can't do anything. So I was the only woman on the woman's side, and I definitely felt God there. It was silent. It was beautiful. It was just there's these little pigeons that live in the wall. It's like they're always cuddling each other, and that was just very lovely. But I see God in ways that, like, you know, something bad happens and then it'll just unfold into a series of events. And then I'll be like, wow, this is why that happened.
Yes.
So, yeah. So like, for instance, my husband and I lived in New York and he was paying the landlord in cash, the landlord's assistant in cash. So the person who collected the cash, because she told him to. And then it turned out that she was pocketing everything that people were giving her. And he was getting receipts, but he'd lost them. So she was pocketing everything. The landlord didn't know. And the landlord one day is like, you owe us like $10,000 or something crazy like that. And so we had to pay back a little bit every month. And she said, if you happen to find the receipts, then, you know, we will reimburse you and everything. And then our next door neighbor was an Ecuadorian gangster, and like he literally held a knife up to my husband's neck, and we're like, we got to get the hell out of here, but we couldn't move because we had rent control. And in New York, we first month rent, last month rent, 80 times your rent, like it's crazy. So we literally couldn't move in New York, and we didn't know what to do. It just came a time where our neighbor was like doing crack and everything and getting much, much worse. I was scared out of my mind. He would like pound at the door every night at 3 a.m. like, we have to get out of here. Let's try to go to L.A., but we were broke. And then we were cleaning up once. We started finding all the receipts.
Wow.
We found all the receipts. And then eventually, like 2 months later, we took all the receipts, we got all the money back, we were able to leave, and we drove to LA and moved here. And then a few months after that, our landlord bought us out And we were able to rent a second place here above our place so that we'd have more room. We were able to buy a car and like all this stuff. So in the moment, it seemed horrible. And then, you know, and then you realize like what the miracle is. It's like, like once you have kids, it's like, you know, kids don't understand like why you're doing something, but you're there the whole time and you're doing it for the good. Like if you're like sleep training and they're crying, like you're there listening to them. Like God's always here for us, always watching out for us, but we don't know like what the best thing for us is. He does. Mm-hmm. So like, when I'm sleep training my baby and she's crying, like I'm doing it so that she will be able to go to bed on her own and won't have to cuddle me every night forever.
Yes. I've heard a sermon about this before, and the way that we view God as a father to help understand a lot of the discipline that you go through in life, in the same way that a loving father would discipline the sons that he loves, the children that he loves, that our Father does that for us. And it helped me, it just helped put it in greater perspective. There's a whole Hebrews 12 is all about discipline and all about comparing God to a father who loves you. And that's why you go through these trials and these things that to grow your strength. And because it's, you know, it's coming from a place of love. You mentioned having kids. I did want to ask you about becoming a mom, but before I do that, and there was one more question about what you're saying earlier, like some of the stereotypes that people have about Orthodox Judaism, and is that they're really sexist towards women or are domineering towards women. Can you talk about that a little bit and what the reality is for you?
Yeah, for me, it's not like that at all. I've had in like, so I've been doing this for since 2010, so 12 years. I've had maybe two sexist things happen and other sexist things that weren't from Orthodox Jews. They were from Reform, who like, I was covering my hair and this guy's like, why are you covering your hair? Why are you doing what a man tells you to do? I'm like, do you not see the irony of that? You're telling me to not cover my hair and you're a man. So, but yeah, so like we pray separately. And then we put like, it's called a mechitza. We put a separator between us. In some synagogues, that's like a low bar and you can still see each other. In some synagogues, it's like sheer curtains. In some synagogues, it's a mirror. In some synagogues, women sit on the top and the men sit on the bottom. Like it all depends what your level is. There's so many different nuances within Orthodox Judaism that you can find one that is more suitable. And
that's different for me, that you sit separately. What's the purpose behind that?
So it's just a modesty thing. Basically, we have a concept called Shomer Nagia, which is like guarding yourself, which means that you don't touch any person of the opposite gender you're not related to or married to. So I guess that would be, you know, if we're all sitting together, that could happen. Also, it's distracting. And personally, like, I've seen it play out where before Danny and I were Orthodox, we would go to less religious synagogues. We would sit together. We would talk the whole time. And it was so distracting. Like, and it was just so nice once I just started sitting with women. And yeah, so I don't think that's sexist at all. There are some synagogues where like the women can't see as well. And I don't know that that's intentionally sexist or just a man not knowing what that's like to not see as well, like if they can't see the rabbi as well. So that would just need like a woman to go in there and be like, yo, we can't see. Like, please move this thing back a little bit so we can see. But some women are perfectly okay with that. And a lot of the stuff that it's just like what you were saying with the cults, it's just abusive people who happen to be religious. Like the unorthodox, like her family was abusive. Her father was mentally ill. And that's why that happened. And that happens in every community. It's like, why are you targeting us? Like, there aren't stories about Muslims going off and not being religious. Like, why? You're so like, and also it's anti-Christian. So many anti-Christian stories, so many stories about Bible camps and gay conversion camps and all this really like fringe stuff that is not representative of most people. Mm-hmm. Most of us are level-headed, we're rational, and we just find comfort in being religious and we feel like it's the truth. But they paint us as extremists. Trying to think of another example. There's just the separation of the sexes. And Judaism, some people find it hard to contend with, but Judaism is very into gender roles. But I've never felt oppressed as a woman. Like they say, like the woman is the receiver and she's the one who builds the home. Like the man brings home the materials and she builds it basically. And she's responsible for the spirituality of the home and everything. And we also have a song that we sing every Friday. The men sing every Friday night to their wives, which is called A Woman of Valor. And in the song, it's, you can look it up. It's basically the words are like, she goes to the market and she gets goods for her family and she negotiates land deals for her family. So they have land and she stays up all night tending to the house, but also she's dealing with the workers and like just all this stuff that's very empowering.
I think we've reached a moment culturally with third wave feminism where there became, at least in my experience, this idea that if there's any division of labor, like on average a division of labor, or if a couple chooses to have a division of labor in the home along gender lines, that is like not necessarily oppressive and wrong. And as I've come out of social justice, I started realizing there's nothing inherently. I was sort of scared off from ever, in a weird way, it sort of primes you from the get-go when you come into feminism, or at least in my case it did, to sort of push off things that are deemed traditionally feminine or roles or things. And I would kind of, you know, I poo-pooed motherhood. I looked down at people who had children early. I was kind of in that whole, you know, career first place that, you know, and women are equal and we do everything the same. And it's just changed having coming out of that. I now view that as so rigid itself. That's so rigid to say mm-hmm. that, you know, women can't be the ones in charge of the household or can't be the ones in charge of homemaking or childcare because that's somehow sexist. It's like, no, if that's what works well for your family, there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about a little bit about motherhood? You have another piece, which especially for these times when I think a lot of people are talking about how these times are somewhat dystopian. You wrote another piece and put it up here on the screen. It's called Why I'm Having Kids Despite World Turmoil. Can you tell me a little bit about that choice and what you talk about here?
Yeah. So I just noticed that like I'm 33. Some of my friends are not really friends anymore. Most of my friends nowadays are religious and have kids, but a lot of people I grew up with going to high school, they're like 35 and they're still not having kids. And it's a choice for them because, yeah, they put their career first and everything. And it's really hard. Like you have to, if you're not really into having kids, then you have to have a kid to see what it's like. And it's the best thing ever. Like, I love it. I know not everyone's going to love it. And it's really hard on some people, especially at first. Like I had postpartum depression, so I've gotten help for that. But it's just the most rewarding thing. It's the most fascinating thing, watching kids grow. And I think people are just making excuses like, oh, the world's going to end in 12 years because AOC told me. And it's like, no, the world has always been crazy. And I think it's much less crazy than it used to be. Like people used to just kill each other all the time. They didn't have therapy or know how to work on their problems, or there was just rape and murder and incest and all these terrible things. And I think as a whole, societies have gotten so much better. So yeah, that's just people just not wanting to. And we're taught that like we should put our career first and we have to be completely established before we have kids because they're going to ruin everything. And that's not true at all. Like when I had my first kid, my income jumped $50,000 a year now that I've had my second kid, it looks like it might be on par to jump another 50. Wow. Every baby brings a loaf of bread up with it. Because you receive blessings from heaven when you have a baby. You're supposed to have babies. You're supposed to procreate. And practically also, you're just like, I have another kid. I have to work harder. You become much more focused. Like, if you want to get something done, give it to a working mom. Like, we're the most driven people because we have to be. Like, yeah.
How does motherhood change you?
Wow. Well, at first, when you have a baby, you're like, I don't ever want to do anything else ever again. I just want to cuddle with my baby. It's really tough when you have to, like, be in the real world again. But I'd say I became a much better person because I'm a lot kinder because, like, I think, like, Joe Rogan had a joke about this or something. But, like, you see someone, even if it's, like, a crazy homeless person, you're like, that's someone's child. Like, that person used to be a baby, you know? So I just am, like, much kinder to people. Like, you don't know what they came from, what they're going through. And, like, everyone starts out as a sweet, innocent child. So I definitely am, like, more motherly in that way. I try to be more sensitive to people, even people I don't agree with or like. Like, I just try to give people the benefit of the doubt all the time. And then it's just I guess I'm a much happier person too, because just like I had my daughter right before the pandemic. And if I didn't have a baby in my house during the pandemic, I probably would have gone nuts because she kept me so happy every single day. And just when you make a baby laugh, it's just the biggest joy in the world. Or just like seeing them hit milestones, like walking and stuff like that. It just gives you the greatest joy. So yeah, I'd say I'm a lot more like joyous and you just enjoy life more. And you think like, oh, like before you have kids and you see other people's kids, it's not the same. Like other people's kids are not as cute. I used to babysit. It was so exhausting. But when it's your kid, it's not. A, because like they're so cute, and B, because you have this instinct within you to keep them alive.
Yeah.
So, I'm just a lot more like, you know, I always thought it was corny, like doing kids activities, like when parents would take their kids, like one of these things, like, and now like everything is like, if we go on a vacation, everything's about the kids because it makes you so happy to see them happy.
And to see them like learning, experiencing things for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My pastor said once something to the effect of like, sometimes people have kids because they don't have enough love in their life or their marriage or and they think it'll add love. And he's like, that's not the right approach. You should have the love first. And then it's like, and then you have a child because you have so much love. You want to share it with another human being and raise this human being in love. I thought that was a really great way of looking at it. And, it sounds like that's what you guys are doing. Can you tell me also about, this is just something I get, a feeling I get from your social media posts. Maybe I'm off base. Do you have a homestead? Do you have all these chickens and stuff? Are you preparing for bad times?
I'm not preparing. No. We just, my husband, and also I want to go back to what you said about, you know, not having love. Like, people who have kids because their marriage is falling apart, it's going to make it much worse. Like, you need to be solid. And I hate it. Like, even when people put on their social media, like, mom, wife, I'm like, no, wife, mom.
Yes.
Without your husband.
Yes.
Without your husband, or if a guy said, guys don't really do that. But it's usually women get so into their children that they neglect their husband. The Torah literally tells us you need to have sex with your husband twice a week. I know that's a little like not PC, but couples need intimacy. And the Torah has so many rules around it that, and it's not the Torah, it's a rabbinic commentator who said, I believe, who said twice a week. But there's so many rules around it because if you don't have love in your marriage, then you're not having kids. So the goal is to like have a great marriage. And even when it comes to sex, like, we're not rigid. We do not have sex through a hole in the sheet, as Larry David might joke about. You know, it's where you do whatever you can within Torah guidelines of not spilling your seed, because you can't, you cannot do that. But you do what you need to do in order to have a fulfilling sex life. That's very, very important to us, because we need to have good marriages. We need to have what we call shalom bayit, which is peace in the home. And you need to be strong for your children. You need to be a unit. If one parent says one thing and one parent says the other, that's a recipe for disaster. You need to stand as one. So I come from like a divorced home, pretty crappy childhood. So I'm not blaming my parents, because I think like a lot of people our age experience this. It was just much more hands off. Mm-hmm. Our parents were much more hands off. And I don't think helicopter parenting is good. You got to find the middle. But because I come from that, and because I was such like a lonely kid, like I feel like that really helped me be a better mother, and doing whatever I can to not get divorced. Because sometimes it does, you know, you're married, like sometimes it gets really tough, especially if you both come from backgrounds where not everything was peachy. So you really have to do the work. And then what was your other question?
Before we get to the chickens, I want to reiterate what you're saying. It's funny, because I've come to that similar conclusion the past few years, which is that order of priority again that people have in their home life. And I think you're right. I think a lot of modern culture, the order is disrupted, and just the way I've seen it in play out in different couples I've witnessed or families, I think sometimes people put the kids up above the spouse, like you said, or they put themselves up there. And it just seems to me that order, that best order, is like God, your spouse, your kids, you, and then your dog Tiger. Tiger would be above me, actually.
Yeah, when I pray, it's, you know, praying. First, I pray for like a recovery for everyone I know who's sick. My husband, my daughters, family, pets, me.
Yeah. I call Tiger number three. So I was asking you about homesteading, which you said you don't do, but you do raise chickens and stuff.
Yeah, I don't even eat the eggs, because I don't really love eggs. But yeah, I just keep them as pets, and tortoises, and I'm great at succulents. I'm not a great gardener. A lot of things die on me, but I'm really good with animals. So I'm not in any way a prepper. I don't believe in that. And I believe, if the world ends, I don't know.
So that just cuts off a whole avenue of questioning I had here about homesteading. That's not you. Okay.
These are very smart. I believe everyone should get chickens. They're illegal in most places. Even roosters, you're allowed to have a rooster in LA because they don't even bark as loud as a dog at the decibel level. And yeah, their eggs are great. You don't even have to refrigerate them. I don't know if you knew that, but if you have chickens, or like if you go to the farmer's market, those eggs are not refrigerated, and you don't even have to refrigerate butter if it's never been refrigerated. Wow. So it's just like the eggs taste so much better. Like, this is how we're supposed to live. We're not supposed to live where we're eating eggs that were like a chicken laid like 3 weeks ago. it's really weird.
I ask because I'm curious. I do want to, once we get through with our house renovations, like we want to get some chickens. We've got a lot of big plans for down the road. So, you know, do you want to talk a little bit about then going back to just your faith? And sometimes I use these interviews, just, I want to learn more about different belief systems. And how do you view what's going on in the world right now through your religious lens? I know what I think is happening through a cultural lens. I think we're in the middle of a cultural war. I do. I also think we're in a spiritual war. Mm-hmm. What are your views on where we're at as a society?
I think technology in combination with, you know, I think the government definitely would rather you worship the government than religion. Trying to break up the family. Like, when I see that California is going to pay for daycare, on the one hand, I'm like, that's good. On the other hand, I'm like, that's not good, because that means send your kids to daycare and go the F back to work. Like, just keep being a cog in this economic machine, you little robot. And the same with, what else was I going to say with there? It's just not so family oriented anymore. And that causes divorce, and divorce, I think, is just the cause, like, for kids in a divorced home, it just causes so many problems. My husband used to work in a drug rehab for teenagers. 90% of them came from divorced homes. So the breaking down of the family unit is very much hurting our society. It's breaking down partly because we're less connected to religion and spirituality. And religion's not for everyone, but I do think it's important for everyone to have a higher power. Because when you think that you're completely in control of your life, when things go wrong, it just causes depression, anxiety, everything. But when you like let that control go and you say, okay, this is for a reason, this is all for the good, God's watching out for me, like, you don't feel that way. I just feel completely at peace whatever happens. You know, there was a story, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent. There was a story about a very holy rabbi, and he was in the woods because they used to have to travel in the woods. And he was with someone else, and they're getting close to his town, and suddenly they hear screaming. And the guy turns to the holy rabbi, and the rabbi's calm. He says, "What? Aren't you concerned that could be your family?" And he said, "No, because my family would never scream. They would accept whatever's happening to them." It's like, wow, like, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Like, to have so much faith in God to be there
during the storm.
Yeah. But we, you know, there's so many things going into it. Like, Hollywood would rather we worship them, and it's better that we worship consumerism and things like that. So what I think is going on is that people are becoming so isolated because of technology. We're really into ourselves because of technology. And you can't even blame yourself, because they make it addictive. And they also play up, like, for a year or so, my husband was just posting political things on Facebook, and it would get so much traction. But as soon as you don't post something political, it's like Facebook doesn't care. You get no likes, because they make money when we're fearful, when we're angry, we get the hate clicks. There's much more engagement on just like political divisive posts, especially on Twitter. Whenever I tweet anything, I get nothing. And then like one time I replied to Josh Gad, you know, Olaf from Frozen. He tweeted about like anti-Semitism on the right. I'm like, yeah, but it's also on the left. And I got so many retweets, and I'm like, as soon as you post about anti-Semitism or anything political, like, it gets boosted, because
it depends. Here's my experience with that. Unless you get on the wrong thinker list and get shadow banned. I have a friend who I've had on the deprogram before, who's Julianne Davis. She's an actress who's like a conservative, came out as conservative, and her posts, she's just by virtue of looking at what happened with her numbers, her engagement, and then at a certain point, I think she became shadow banned, to the point where if she wants to talk about anything political, she has to post like a cute, attractive photo of herself, and then in the comments below it, put all of her commentary. Oh my and God. It gets more views that way. And I'm like, she's really figured out a workaround.
Yeah. Yeah. If I post a picture of myself and my baby or whatever, like, I can't post a link on Facebook because it bans it. You have to post it in the comments. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, that's a different tangent, but we're losing, people need people, and they couldn't see people during the pandemic. So that exacerbated it. And that caused all these depression, that caused people to overdose, suicide, all these horrible things. And people need community, and religion, church, synagogue, mosque. This was all points where people could come together and be a community under shared values. And now that's just disintegrating. And I think that's a terrible thing. We are social creatures. We need each other, and to come together under shared values. So Yeah, there's a book about like bowling leagues. I don't know if you've heard of that. It was from like the 80s about how there's no more bowling leagues anymore. And that was just incredible, like how bowling leagues like keep people together. Something as simple as that. Just people are just, people think that posting on social media and talking on Messenger keeps you connected, but it doesn't. Like you need face-to-face, in-person connection.
I completely agree. And church does that for a lot of people. Did you, you mentioned that this comment you made that got a lot of traction was about there being anti-Semitism on the left as well. Can you talk a little bit about what was happening to Orthodox Jewish communities during the lockdowns?
Whole bunch of different things. So in my community, we didn't meet for like 2 months. And then when we met, it was outside, it was distance, it was masked. So it was pretty hard. Like we were, instead of praying in synagogue, we were praying in people's backyards. And then in LA, it was just like much worse than the rest of the country. I'd say maybe not as like the same as New York, but in Texas, you guys were open. But our masks literally just came off. I don't know, like it's all a blur, but just maybe a few months ago, you know. It was crazy. Like I got the vaccine because I work in coffee shops and they wouldn't let me sit and have a coffee without showing my card. So, you know, and of course they kept synagogues closed, but you know, Target could be open. Like that's or churches, like they were finding all these churches. And so some people did in backyards, some people didn't believe in COVID, like in New York and in the Hasidic communities, and they just kept meeting without any masks, without anything, which I don't think was the best approach either. Because at first it was really, really a horrible disease, like when it first came out, especially in New York, because it was in the winter and the conditions were terrible. Like living in New York, you're already like really unhealthy. So if you get something like COVID, it's like way worse. And they were using ventilators, which was stupid. So yeah, I'd say it was all different, but we all stayed together. We would meet on Zoom when we could, and we would check in on each other. So we had a little bit, but even for me being in a community where I have so many people I can reach out to, it was really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to leave and like go somewhere else that was more open, but like I just couldn't find anywhere that I liked as much as LA. Because even with all its craziness, it's still a beautiful place. And overall, it's really great, aside from how they're destroying it. But
I love that you can see the beauty in it. I admit I've become cynical about my old, where I used to live. But it's interesting. We had my church actually started during the lockdowns, the very first service. And it was mask optional. Most people did not wear them, but you know, if someone was sick or if someone came down with COVID, they would not come to service. You know, that sort of like the way we used to live, where it was like, well, if you're sick, don't go out, or or actually a little more. I think in we weren't always as cautious as some Asian countries, you know, who would put a mask on if they were sick out of respect for others, but. Did you pay attention at all to what was happening in New York to the Orthodox Jewish community and some of the, I thought to me as an outsider, it looked like demonizing of Jewish people who were still meeting?
Oh yeah, there was a lot of that. And I remember like they were being singled out for not complying. And but the, like, so, like my friend who's secular Jew was saying to me, like, why don't they just follow the rules? Why are they, you know,
why don't they just follow the rules? Exactly. Look at history.
And I said to her, I said, because she's in a bubble, and I said to her, a lot of these people have 9 or 10 kids in a 2-bedroom apartment. They're going to send their kids to camp. They're going out of their minds. Like, you need to see the entire picture and realize people are coming from a good place and they want to do what's best for their family. And Orthodox Jews are also demonized because a lot of them don't get vaccines. There's distrust for the government. I'd say on a whole, like, we are encouraged to keep the laws, but I mean, vaccines aren't necessarily like a law, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah, it's a choice. But yeah, we're constantly demonized, even though there's a ton of hipster moms in Brooklyn doing the same. Like, if there's a measles outbreak in New York, it's always like, oh, must be the Orthodox Jewish community. It's like, no, or it could be a hipster mom in Brooklyn who's giving her kids, you know, vitamin B instead of the polio vaccine. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's just the media hates religion in general. People who go into the media tend to be more liberal, and that means less religious usually. And this is to say most of my friends are liberal. I consider myself liberal, like, financially, because I used to be on food stamps and government assistance, and we need a social safety net. Like, it's not that the government should necessarily do it because they screw up everything, but I think this country is really bad at leaving people behind who aren't, like, fitting into the perfect mold of being a worker. That's a different story. But yeah, so they hate religion in general. And then, like, Orthodox Jews, Jews have always represented religion, have represented God in societies. And that's why Hitler wanted to wipe us out, and other Isabel and Ferdinand in 1492 and all these other times, because when you represent God, you represent a conscience, and people don't want that. They'd rather just do what they want. So yeah. Greeks, Romans tried to destroy us. Their societies collapsed, and we're still here. So we must be doing something right.
If people want to learn more about the Orthodox Jewish faith, where can they find you? And tell me a little bit about your book for kids.
Yeah, so I wrote it because I found that there wasn't a children's book for the children of converts, and there's a lot of converts. So, I mean, even, you know, Ivanka Trump is the most, you know, out there one. She converted Orthodox. But yeah, so I just felt like kids really need that support and to see a story about themselves. One, I'm against this wokeness with diversity and everything, but I do think it's good to have different voices represented. You know, I think we've taken that overboard for sure, but it is good to see, like, different perspectives nowadays and having representation where there wasn't any, especially with, like, Down syndrome models and things like that. I think that's really important to see yourself reflected in some part of the media or Hollywood. Like, it's just really affirming and makes you feel less alone and that you're, like, real. I don't know if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I wanted to provide that for kids. And not everyone is inside the box. We're very outside of the box, religious people. So yeah, I wanted to provide that for other kids.
I think my issue with when they say, you know, we need to reflect everyone's experience and so that kids can see themselves in media and stuff. A lot of times they mean what seems to me are the least important things about a person, like their sex or their gender, race, these kind of things. But everybody that they're talking about has the same beliefs and opinions. Mm-hmm. So that's where it bothers me, is when they talk about diversity, they don't mean diversity of viewpoint or diversity of, or even of culture or religion. Mm-hmm. They mean diversity in terms of, like, what you look like. And that's where I have that sticking point. I will say, this might piss off some of my viewers, I don't know. I do think it's good. I don't have a problem with showing more diversity in terms of race and sex and stuff in characters and books and TV shows. But like you said, they've taken it to this extreme where it's not like a, in the 90s, it used to just sort of organically happen because mm-hmm. that's where society was going. And you would even see sometimes race swapping and gender swapping of characters, like in the Battlestar Galactica reboot. When they brought Battlestar Galactica back, they made Boomer. Boomer was a black man in the original series. They made him an Asian woman. Nobody mm-hmm. cared.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't pushed down your throat. Like, mm-hmm. look how moral we are now. And they really do push it as a kind of morality to change all these characters, race and gender. So I don't know what you think about that, but that's kind of where my opinions on it.
Yeah, I hate all this be anti-racist stuff because, okay, I admit, like, I don't really experience racism because I'm a white person. But I, just from what I've witnessed, like, overall, I think America works. Like, I think that people don't give a crap about what you look like as long as you're a good person, you know, that you're respectful of others. Yeah, so I just get
upset. But we're changing now. We're, like, going backwards now, in my opinion. Yeah. That's why I speak against woke, because I feel like we were reaching a place through liberalism of we were moving more steadily towards individualism and really judging people by the things that matter, like their character, their behavior, the strength of their ideas. And now I think it's funny because I think you could almost say the devil found a new way to sell racism, which is like, okay, now how do I get people back? Because we're on this track towards individualism, but we need to get back to collectivism and through racism and sexism, whatever. How do we do that? Mm-hmm. And so that's really how I view it, is it. I've come to view it as just two sides of the same coin, and it's taken us back to that place. So
it's been also so hurtful for Jews. Like, I hate it when people say, as a comedian, you can't punch down. It's like, who decides what is up and what is down? Yes. Most comedians don't do accents or make jokes to, like, make someone feel bad. They make it to make light of something because life is really difficult and we need humor to get through. And it's one of the most sophisticated defense mechanisms there is. When Gilbert Gottfried joked about 9/11, like 10 days after 9/11, I thought that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going through this trauma and he's joking about it and it's great. It helps us as humans to deal with such horrible things. So, like, my husband can't even do accents anymore. I don't know if he talked about this, but, like, he was on a radio show doing an accent and they're like, ew, like,
he's a comedian.
Yeah. Like, there's some comedians, okay, they might be racist or sexist and they're not going to make it. Like, the system will weed them out because they're a hateful person, I think. And they're not funny. It's not funny to be hateful. Getting back to what we said about
Kylie, can I interrupt here for a second and tell you, you know, one of the comics I used to represent was Margaret Cho. And before we parted ways and I left that world, there people had even started, like, some of the super woke people would even come for her, even though she was Asian, whenever she would do her mom's accent. You know, and Montgomery Ward, she would do the thick Asian accent, and some of the super woke would even come for her and say, you can't do it. Cause usually they'll say, oh, well, if you're of this race, you can do it. Yeah. They would say that she's making a caricature of a stereotype of an Asian woman. And I thought her response was great, which was like, what am I supposed to do when I impersonate my mom? Is she supposed to have, like, a British accent or, like, what? Like, that's what she sounds like.
I know. Oh, what I was going to say is what's it called? Like, intersectionism?
Intersectionalism. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, there's this weird thing that happens where Jews are never counted as a diversity. We're always seen as, like, the top of the pyramid or whatever that you want to call it. And we deserve, it's like how white people deserve to be treated poorly because we're all racist, apparently. So they put Jews up there too. And they say, well, Jews are white. Jews have white privilege, blah, blah, blah. The only reason Jews are white, they were expelled from their homeland where they were darker because they were in a sunny place, a hot place. Like, Jesus was dark because he was in a hot place and expelled to, they had to flee to European countries. Jews are not inherently white and we are a minority. There's only like 13 million of us, something very small, 0.2% of the US population. And they lump us in with, like, having power and everything. And if you look at Jewish history, that's not true at all. Like, you know, there's a bunch of, like Hitler was very into, like, saying, you know, Jews have all the money and everything. It's like Jews have all the power, but we were forced into the role of like taxes and money and everything in these countries because they made us do it. Like, it's not that there's no, inherent thing about being Jewish that makes you good with money or makes you successful. Like, the reason why a lot of Jewish people are successful is because we put a real emphasis on education and we learn Torah. And that the book I said, the Gemara, about rabbis arguing back and forth, it teaches you, it's like literally like if you want to be a good lawyer, read that, because it teaches you how to argue.
Well, it's kind of like the, excuse me, Asian community, which also puts a really big, strong emphasis on education. And I see within the woke religion, I do think of it as like a religion, that Jewish people and Asian people are considered people of color when it suits the ideology, and are considered white or white adjacent, which is what they call Asian people, when it doesn't suit the ideology. So it just depends. Like
limiting Asians at Harvard because they're so successful.
Yeah.
So they freaking deserve it.
Yes.
They work hard. There's no, like, I think I heard once the genetic difference is that they have a better memory, but it's not like they're smarter. Like everybody is basically the same, I think. They just work really hard, sometimes to a detriment. Sometimes it means like there's a suicide forest in Japan, for instance, because it's like crazy mentality of, you know, if you lose your job, it's the most shameful thing ever and you hide it from your family. And sometimes people commit suicide. So I think it is a bit extreme, but I'm not judging them. But Asians make the most money in America out of all the groups because they work hard. And immigrants, especially, like here, I'm surrounded by a lot of Persian Jews. I interviewed, I don't know if you know Dr. Sheila Nazarian.
I don't.
You would love her. Follow her on social media.
Okay.
She's a big conservative, but also like super nice. But she literally had to escape from Iran. They were shooting at the car she was in. She was hiding under like stacks of like corn kennels. And she had to be separated from her father and all this and that. And she came here. She built a plastic surgery business. She got on Netflix. She has 1 million followers. She had her own Netflix show, like just crazy stuff. So the immigrant mentality, especially, like they're the hardest workers, you know.
Work their guts off. Yeah.
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 So they should not be punished for that. And
for their race. That's what they're doing to Asian students who apply, is they're being punished for simply by, because they're Asian.
Yeah.
They have to reach higher standards because Harvard and these other schools have decided, well, we have too many Asian people.
Yeah. So I mean,
it's completely racist.
And it's also like, why would you want to put someone who's not able to flourish at Harvard? Like, let's say you accept someone who doesn't have as great of an academic record. They're going to struggle in that environment. Why don't you put them in an environment where they're going to succeed, like at a lesser school, but they'll be the top person there, you know?
Like David Hogg.
I don't know.
He got into Harvard with really subpar SAT scores. Mm-hmm. In his case, he got in because he is a loud activist. And I think they liked the PR of having him. But I just like to tease him. I think he's insufferable.
Is he from Parkland?
Yes. He's the kid from the shooting. Yeah. So this has been a great conversation. I know we've been all over the place. Thank you guys for staying tuned with us as we talk. I felt like this is what, there might be some men who are like, oh, that's a real lady conversation, because we're all over the place. But, can you tell people where to find you and the name of your book?
The book is Jewish Just Like You, KylieOralobel.com. Just Google me. I'm everywhere. And you said if people want to learn about Orthodox Judaism, they can read my stuff. Also, Shtissel's a pretty good show. So Shtissel, it's Israeli. It's on Netflix. Like, none of the actors are actually Orthodox, but it represents Orthodox Judaism in a good way. I think it's like Shtisel. Okay. And a lot of Orthodox Jews love it. I've only seen one episode and it seemed pretty good to me. So that's an easy way to learn about it. Or if you like Ben Shapiro, I guess, if you can keep up with how fast he talks, go ahead. He's just very smart, but he's very intelligent. I don't listen to him because I don't like to listen to politics every day. It just gives me a bad puts me in a bad mood.
I understand that completely. I have an appreciation for him, but I don't listen to him regularly.
He's smart. He's like otherworldly type of smart. I can't do that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kylie, for hanging out here with us today. You guys can find a link to her website below and more information about her book. And thank you for coming to Deprogrammed. See you guys later.